This is Jason David Frank, and you're listening to the Geek Cast Radio Network.
You are now on the inside of what I like to call the Circle of Trust. We are all connected in the great circle of life.
You know something, Bert?
What?
I think you and I are going in circles.
It feels like we're going in circles.
The circle is now complete. When I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master.
Because it's a circle.
Yeah, we heard about the circle.
Yes, we're familiar with shapes.
Hi, this is Chuck.
This is Dan without credit, and we are Talking in Circles, brought to you by the Cast Radio Network, the podcast that's back after a week off. Yes, last week we were just too much going on, so we were off and doing other things, but we're back a little Gregless this week. Unfortunately, he's off on special assignment as he's at Baltimore Comic Con, which I'm sure he'll come back with a lot of stories of next week. Today, we're actually going to have a little bit of a layback episode. There's a bunch of stuff we're going to get to. But before we get to all the fun, how's things going with you, Chuck?
Oh, not too bad. Like you mentioned, we were all pretty busy the last week or so here. And then this week, unlike me, who, when I missed the last episode, I was on vacation, Greg is legitimately on assignment this week as he's at a Comic-Con. So he's going to actually have something to contribute when he gets back. But yeah, I don't know, just a lot of random life stuff, nothing really too exciting to talk about, but it's just, you know, you know better than I do. You get busy and it's gets crazy, you know.
Yeah, it's been quite a busy summer. I've had a lot going on. So last week, ran into some car problems, which was a good time. I get a call or a text from my wife saying her car won't start. I'm like, well, that's fantastic, and you're supposed to have the good car, but she has one of those automatic, you know, the push start car keys, so you know you don't actually, you just walk in, it centers your key and you push it, but it wasn't like recognizing it, so I think maybe the battery said, so I actually went down to my key would work, because didn't work either, tried a bunch of stuff, and ended up just calling AAA, but like it took them like 3 hours to get there, and she had to teach, so. She went in, and I was basically outside, and it was, like, a 99-degree day, just, like, hanging out with, like, you know, can't turn the car on. It was pretty brutal. So just waiting there for a few hours, and that was actually last Thursday, which is a big reason I'm like, I don't even feel like podcasting, because that kind of took all the one out of me, which is, it was not a fun time. But I ended up just needing to charge the battery. Just they jumped us, and it was fine. So don't know if she left a light on or something like that, but it's working fine now, which was great because I was worried it was going to be something electrical and that would have been a huge pain. So
right, like, oh, there's another $300.
yeah. So it was just, they charged it, everything else checked out okay. So that was happy. It was really sunk too. It was like my battery, my phone died too. So it was just like, I was like the dark, it was near dead, and I didn't want to like use it because that's how they, you know, once they get there, they call you. But
yeah,
it does make you realize there's fewer things in the world better to invest in than a AAA membership, because it does come in handy.
Yeah, it certainly does. I've had to use that a couple times in the last few years.
Yeah, and apparently you can get like movie ticket discounts and amusement park discounts, so got to look into that. But actually kind of stunk, but I have kind of a funny story that happened recently this week. So do you ever have a day where you accidentally email the entire office porn?
Because
I did.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh man, that sounds like quite a day.
Yes, yes, very much so. So during the summer year, I worked as a lot of overtime. So at nighttime, the managers and myself, we put out like basically the snack cart for everyone to go to and go, you know, grab some food, because you're there till, you know, 8-9 o'clock at night. It's nice to have a little bit of a snack, and usually just send an email out. And usually in my email, I include like some sort of image, some sort of GIF. Or GIF, or whatever you want to say. And, you know, I was searching for one. I found one I thought was innocent enough. It was just, like, two guys talking, and I'm like, I thought there would be snacks. And then the other guy smiles and laughs. I'm like, oh, this seems innocent enough. So I threw it on there, sent the email out. I don't know, about 15 minutes after that, one of my employees walks in, and it's like, I got something kind of awkward to tell you. I'm like, I have no, what could this be? I'm like, this is racing in my head. It's like that image you sent out, that's actually from porn. I'm like, what? Like, what? Like, I checked my, I'm worried that, like, it was somehow something, like, I sent it out, but it was some other image that ended up actually being included in the email. But it was actually that image, but I guess the guys talking were porn stars, and the one just got arrested recently for beating his wife or something like that. And in the bottom right-hand corner, it was really hard. I didn't even notice that there's a watermark logo for Vivid Video or something like that, which is a porn company. So I sent out a clip of porn to my entire office, letting them know snacks are available. So it's like, that's amazing. That's how my week started. So
well, don't feel bad, because, you know, still awkward that the other guy recognized it immediately. And
well, it wasn't even a guy. It
wasn't
that.
A guy.
Wow. No, she was like, it's because I saw him on the news. Like, she recognized the one guy because he's been in the news for being his wife, so that's how she knew who he was. And
sure.
Yeah, I know. That's a likely story. Yeah. I mean, the good thing is, like, for you to complain it was porn, you would have to have a lot of knowledge about it already, I guess. So, but I'm like, that's something I'm never going to live down. I'm like, I'm only sending out, like, things of, like, when I'm completely aware of what it's coming from now. Yeah. So, but that was a fun day to send that out.
Reminds me of that commercial where the guy, like, clicked on something he wasn't supposed to, and he got, like, a virus in the thing. And it, like, automatically emailed everyone in the office, and you start hearing everyone else open up the same email. And everyone just stand up and just staring at him. It's hilarious.
Or it was that one, I think it was, like, a Super Bowl commercial, like, 2 years ago, when the guy accidentally hits reply all instead of reply.
Oh, yeah.
And starts, like, going around freaking out or something like that. So it was one of those days. So.
Yeah, that's one of my worst nightmares.
But one thing another big thing we did was I went to the drive-in for the first time this summer.
Oh,
and
nice.
And I took my son. It was the first time he ever went to the movies. You know, if it counts, it's up the majority of the time. You know, it was kind of the only way we could go, because we saw Jason Bourne, and it was like we both wanted to see it. And the drive-in works because you can bring kids there because of the, you know, it's, you're in a car or what have you, but yeah. Which also makes me think maybe that had something to do with the battery. Maybe I didn't have it in the right spot, which could have caused the battery to drain anyways. But we ended up going to see Jason Bourne. But it was kind of fun going to the theater. It was actually the second film that was shown. The first one was Secret Lives of Pets, which he had a lot of fun with for the first 15 minutes, and he was done and fell asleep. But a lot of fun beforehand, because they have, like, a field that we were running and playing, and, like, once the movie started, he wanted nothing to do with the movie. He just wanted to go back and play with the playground. I'm like, but I know you also saw Jason Bourne. You know, we're both huge fans of the Bourne franchise. Unlike Greg, who's yet to see them, we still need to get him to watch them.
Yeah.
But I am kind of curious what you thought of, I guess, technically the fourth Jason Bourne movie, but the fifth installment of the franchise.
Yeah. Well, since, you know, Greg hasn't seen any of them, I couldn't really ask him to go because he would be lost, and he really didn't have any interest in it to begin with anyway. So I was sort of talking about it at work the one day at lunch, and someone overheard me, and they're like, oh, I like the Bourne movies, I'll go with you. So I'm like, all right, because I kind of needed someone to go. I didn't want to go by myself, really. So I ended up going with him, and he brought another one of his friends and everything. They were big Bourne fans, so it kind of worked out. It was pretty cool. But like you said, the fifth movie overall, but the fourth one with Matt Damon, because the legacy one doesn't really count, where they only showed his picture, I guess.
I wonder if he still gets paid for that, though. It's like,
right, like, they snuck it in there, you know, just to, like, prove that it's the same universe. But, you know, no, but this one, you know, I was kind of surprised they just went with the Jason Bourne title, you know, nothing fancy there. But it kind of was one of the deals where it met my expectations, like, perfectly evenly, sort of. Like, it wasn't below what I thought or above what I thought. It was pretty much even keel. Because I sort of went in expecting expecting it to be very similar to the other movies, and you know, a lot of the same stuff. And for the most part, to me anyway, it was. And I think it's sort of one of those deals where if you really enjoy the Bourne movies, you're gonna like this one. If you really didn't care for the other ones, you're not gonna care for this one either. A lot of the same type of stuff, a lot of the same, you know, type of action, a lot of the same type of, I don't know what you would call it, but sort of the spy thriller stuff like that, and, you know, setting things up, and a lot of, you know, strategic and tactical things like that. But I like that stuff. I really get into that, and I like, you know, watching how things are sort of playing out and how they're setting things up, and I just sort of get a kick out of those, all of these type of movies, and especially the Bourne ones, because you're familiar with the character, and you obviously you know what he's capable of and everything, so you're kind of watching things unfold, and you're like, yeah, I think I know what's going to happen, because you know what Jason Bourne can do, but, so, you know, that stuff, I always get a kick out of that, so I enjoyed it, but I think my only complaint was probably that it did seem a bit long. Maybe, like, you know, maybe somewhere in the middle it got a little bit long, you know, but I think, like, the ending of it, probably the last 20-30 minutes or so, I thought was really, really exciting, really intense, and I thought they ended it really, really well. I felt like they sort of wrapped it up in a way that it could be a great place to end it if they don't make any more movies.
Yeah.
But also, it was sort of open-ended enough where if they wanted to kind of force another one, they probably could. But but I liked how they ended it. To me, it was sort of like, I felt like, all right, this is probably the last one. Like, I could see, you know, I would be happy just stopping here, you know, like, with how it ended and everything. Yeah. And it was sort of satisfying in a way, because you sort of... without really giving anything away, but you see him try to kind of do this one last thing at the end where he kind of shows, what you would say, like, his tactical intelligence. He kind of shows off one last time right at the end and everything, and even when you're not really expecting it. So that was really cool how it ended. And like I said, maybe a little bit slow in the middle, but I enjoyed, I enjoyed his performance. It didn't seem like he was in it a whole lot as far as like dialogue and things like that. It was a lot of setup with like Tommy Lee Jones' character and stuff like that, which, by the way, is looking really, really old. I was like, wow, Tommy Lee Jones, man, he's getting old.
Yeah.
But he did a great job. I thought the, you know, the other agent that they brought in, he was pretty exciting. Still very reminiscent of like some of the other guys that they had in the other ones, so that that was one of those things where it was kind of more of the same. And I could see where someone might get a little bored with it, and you know, maybe they didn't like it as much. But since I do get such a kick out of these movies, it really didn't bother me at all that it was that similar. So I had a really fun time, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah. So like, this is probably my most anticipated movie going in, because I am such a big fan of the Jason Bourne films. You know, Bourne Ultimatum, maybe, if not my favorite action film of all time. And I was happy to see that Paul Greengrass and Matt Damon with both coming back, so that had me excited. And, like, I feel like with this, like, the recipe is the same. Like, a lot of the things that you get in the Jason Bourne movie are here, but it still tastes a little bit different. And I will put a little bit of a caveat. So, like I said, I did see this in the drive-in, and it was the second movie that was shown. So this ended up like not starting to like 10 something. So there's a good chance I may have dozed off. Nothing to do with the movie, but I was just like one of those things where it was way past my bedtime. So I don't feel like I can fully give it like a complete review because of that. So I do feel like I miss pieces here and there, but I don't know if that's the movie or because of myself. But I like, for what I did, you know, I do feel like I saw the vast majority of it, and I did like it. It didn't necessarily, like you said, it hit your expectations. It did fall beneath them, and like, I thought the action was well done. Like, it gave me that, but I don't know, something just felt missing to me. It just didn't have the same type of urgency, or like it didn't feel like their heart was there. And now that's kind of generic or so, but it almost felt like one movie too many in a way, where it didn't, the other characters outside of Jason Bourne, I didn't find as interesting. And I don't like when they try to no, this is really the most important story, or like how they try to not retcon the past, but like try to tie it into his past even more. And
yeah.
I mean, like this is really the real bad. Like, this is the guy you really want to get, because I felt like that was a little, I didn't really buy as much. And instead of like progressing Jason Bourne, I feel like he's almost regressing as a character in a way. And I enjoyed it, but, and I like Tommy Lee Jones's character. I like the performance was fine, but I didn't, compared to like the other character people that were in similar roles, like Brian Cox or Pam Landy or Daniel Strathorn, or I forget the exact name, but for the past films, like I really wanted to see Jason Bourne take them down. Like, there was something about him, like I'm like, or not with Pam Landy, she was more even keel, but I felt like there was an interesting dynamic and like Supremacy, and I didn't have that as much. Like I was kind of missing that piece. Yeah. The set pieces were all fantastically done. There's like a great, the motorcycle chase, and the last, like you said, 20-30 minutes is like amazing in Vegas, and I don't know, it's still good, but I would probably would rank it as better than the last, like the Bourne Legacy, but I would probably put it underneath Identity and Supremacy and Ultimatum, and I still think Ultimatum is the overall best one for me.
What did you think of the girl's character? And I can't think of her name. You probably know it offhand, but
That's another piece. Like I forget her name too, but she was basically replacing Julia Stiles, and
yeah,
I didn't necessarily buy as much, without spoiling anything, the path her character goes down. I don't know. Like, it felt like that was a contrivance I was able to accept with Julia Stiles' character in the first few films, but it felt like they were going to that well again, and it felt a little out of place in a way. So it was the same type of recipe, but it just tasted a little different.
Yeah. Alicia Vikander is her name.
Oh, yeah. She's a great actress. She was in, she's going to be in the new Tomb Raider. She had a lot of films last year in Ex Machina. She was amazing. Yeah. I think she's a great actress, but the issues I had with her were more a script problem than they were a performance problem.
Yeah. I liked her a lot. Like you said, performance-wise, I thought she was great. She sort of caught my interest in the beginning. Like, I was sort of, like, taken in, because it's like, at first, you're not sure. I mean, you're probably more familiar with the actress than I was, so you probably knew she had a little bit bigger role, but, you know, as myself, just kind of coming into this and seeing her in there, I wasn't really sure who she was, and I thought maybe she would be more of a secondary character, but as things started going along, she, you know, obviously became more and more involved in the plot, and so she kind of, like, captivated me in a little way, because just because it caught me off guard, and I didn't know who she was, and just how she kind of emerged and everything. Like, she's like a seemingly sort of a lower ranking employee here, and you see Tommy Lee Jones sort of giving her the reins a little bit more, and for whatever reason, it just intrigued me, like, that thought. Maybe I was trying to compare it to my job, and like someone giving you the reins of a big project or something when you're, you know, you haven't really proven yourself yet. But, and it was cool how, you know, once it developed, again, I don't want to give away too much, but she was sort of like, almost sort of playing two ends, sort of like playing both sides, and that sort of interested me. I thought her performance was really well, she did really well, like you said, and, you know, maybe some of the script was a little bit weak and stuff, but I really didn't mind too much. I was kind of intrigued by her, and I really, really enjoyed her performance. And then at the end, you know, her interaction with Jason Bourne was pretty cool. I liked how they wrapped it up. So,
did you feel like action scene wise, like, does it measure up? I know Bourne's known for his car chases. This has some as well. How do you feel that they compare to like the last few films?
Honestly, it's been a while since I've seen the last two.
Yeah, okay.
But I think it compared pretty well. Like I said, I thought it was a little bit slow in the middle at some points. I thought the whole escape thing at the expo in Las Vegas, I thought that was pretty well done.
Yeah.
You know, with the just kind of people getting lost in the crowd and like I think almost like I know it's really sad to say, and in no way am I trying to make light of anything, but I think almost like events that have happened in real life, I think they're like taking things from those and they're trying to put them in the movie, and like how people are reacting and how police and law enforcement's reacting and security and stuff like that. But it just felt like really like real, and it was very intense, those scenes when they were trying to escape the expo and, you know, he's trying to blend in with the crowd and everything. So I thought that was really well done. The car chase at the end, you mentioned, obviously, like, once that started happening too, I'm like, okay, we're getting close to the end, because here's the car chase. It's always going to be the car chase at the end, so.
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned the, like, real-life events, because that's very much the truth with the beginning, because you have, you know, the all the grease things that are going on and the kind of the riot that takes place, so. That is very true. I think, like, the tying the real-life event to the first film was almost by happenstance, not, like, because a lot of the stuff was done before a lot of things changed, but I think this one was, I think, more pointed, and obviously they were certainly making note of real-life situations, like you were mentioning.
Yeah. So, yeah, in that respect, I mean, it felt very real to me, and in those types of intense situations. The only thing, I guess, the thing I really had a problem with in the action, I think, was I thought the camera movements were very, very quick and shaky a lot. Like, a lot more than the other ones for some reason, to me, anyway. I don't know if it was just the theater I was in particular, or maybe because I sat a little bit closer than normal, but, like, it was really, like, moving around a lot. In the beginning, at least, and I sort of had trouble, like, focusing on things in the action scene. It was a little bit too fast for me, I thought, but I don't know if you noticed the same thing. Maybe you at the drive-in, maybe you had, like, a little bit farther vantage point, but...
Yeah. I felt like the one spot I did notice that was with, you know, within the grease situation sequence, and you had the sniper sequence. Like, that was a little bit more... chaotic. I felt like it was hard to kind of place where everyone was, and that's where I noticed it the most. But I felt like it evened out near the end, because Greengrass is known for a shaky cam, and it, certainly a lot in Ultimatum and Supremacy, but it works. But yeah. I thought it was about the same here. Some of the like MMA fight ones, I felt like it was a little more excessive. I do like the idea though of Jason Bourne being like a Bloodsport fighter. That's just it's pretty amazing. So
it was.
But yeah, I mean, I was happy with it, but happy, but still, again, I categorize it as disappointing, but still enjoyable.
Yeah, and like I mentioned, I really enjoyed the ending, how they wrapped it up, but what really kind of drove it home for me was the music at the end by Moby. The song is called Extreme Ways, and they play it at the end of every Bourne movie. And I was like, I'm like, they better freaking have this music at the end, because I'm like, that is the Jason Bourne theme music.
Yeah.
And, you know, they weren't really, like, playing it, and then finally, like, you know, it ended and the credits were rolling, and they started playing the music, so I was like, yeah, all right, I'm happy.
We got the
Moby music in there, and I was pretty happy with that, but...
Yeah, that is like his unofficial theme. It's I don't even like Moby, but I like that song. So.
Yeah, yeah.
So very nice, very cool. So the other thing I didn't get a chance to do too was I've been reading a good deal of comics, and I finally got the opportunity to sit down and read a lot of the DC. I don't know if a lot's the right word, but a good amount of the DC Rebirth stuff. And I'm not gonna go through every single one, but as many people well know, DC Comics recently had their, I don't know, another relaunch or reboot or what have you. And we talked about the DC Rebirth issue, the one shot a few, like about a month or two ago when that came out. And I've been holding off and like actually reading the Rebirth issues because I wanted to kind of see what people were saying, like what ones are worth picking up, maybe waiting for trade. But eventually I just bit the bullet and picked up a few. So I read nearly all the Rebirth issues for the most part. Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Titans, Aquaman, and some of the number one issues as well for Batman and Superman and Aquaman and Green Arrow. And just to, you know, see how they are, see which ones I like the most, if there's any ones I think I'll actually continue with. So
I heard the Aquaman one is really good.
Really? I would say, like, I don't know why, but that was probably the one I was the most disappointed in. I think they're all pretty solid for the most part. But I don't know. I guess I was thinking I really loved the New 52 Aquaman when that started out. Yeah. And I think maybe that's what I had in mind. And so overall, like my general opinions is DC Rebirth so far is good, but it's a little confusing to me in the sense of like it's like I don't really understand what's being rebirthed, if that makes any sense. It's so basically there's 10 years that are gone away, but like still the New 52 continuity still seems to exist in some ways, which is a little weird. So still trying to figure, I guess, figuring out what exactly this new universe is. And it's, you know, I get it's still early for me. I know more of these issues have come out, so maybe this has been answered. But and I guess for the Aquaman, it just felt like it was more of the what's the same, and I guess. And maybe I was expecting something like a new beginning in a way, and it wasn't that. It was still pretty solid. Actually, the one I felt like I ended up enjoying the most were Batman, which it's a little bit different. It's done by Tom King, who's a writer that I've become a huge fan of for Sheriffs of Babylon and Vision, and he's done other few things, Grayson as well. And I really like his take on Batman, but one that kind of surprised me the most was actually Superman Reborn. And it's one I think, Chuck, I think of you would probably enjoy the most for a lot of reasons. I know you're a big Superman fan, and it's kind of complicated to start off with, but I don't know. This isn't really a spoiler, but so the New 52 Superman is dead, but there's still Superman, and the Superman that exists in this world is the Superman from before the New 52 or before like the Flashpoint or whatever you want to call it. So he is the Superman that went through the death of Superman. He's the Superman who went through all that stuff in the 90s. Yeah. He's married to Lois Lane, has a son.
I read the first Superman issue.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did. I didn't
get Rebirth or issue number one?
I'm not sure now. It's the one where they showed all the flashbacks with the Doomsday fight, and okay. he was talking to Lois, like trying to tell her that her Clark would come back to life because he did.
Okay, so that's Rebirth.
That's Rebirth. Yeah, I didn't get to read any after that though.
Okay, so in Superman number one. It's actually told in a way through his son's eyes. And so, like, Superman is living now at his farm. And, like, it's kind of feels like a mash between Smallville and in, like, the classic Superman story. Where, like, you're kind of seeing him through this new light. And it feels like the Superman that we all kind of, many of us are fans of from the, you know, from the 90s or just, like, that. There's just something unique or larger than life. And I think using like the son as a surrogate makes a lot of sense because he is that. He's like almost like everyone's dad in a way, for good or bad, for all that entails, from the dad humor to, you know, being that model citizen or what have you. So, and you know, it's not, I would say, amazing, but there are some twists and turns. And then Action Comics, I think, is more that I've also read. Gets more into the classic Superman of Metropolis, and there's some Lex Luthor things going on, and a special drop in from one of your favorite villains to show up in that as well. So if you like that Rebirth issue, I would, or even if you didn't, I would say maybe pick up the first issue and see, or maybe the first trade whenever it comes out. So I think you might dig it quite a bit. Yeah. I don't know what you thought of the actual Rebirth issue.
I liked it. I thought I kind of liked the direction where it was going. Like I said, nothing really too exciting happened in that issue that I read. It was just kind of him talking to Lois and everything.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, I got the feeling they're trying to set up him coming back to life, because that's what he's telling her, like, you know, same thing happened to me, you know, after my fight with Doomsday, but I came back to life because of this weird, you know, Kryptonian coma that we went into.
Yeah,
I'll have to check that out.
I feel like with a lot of the Rebirth issues, they weren't really necessarily to establish a story. They were more to establish characters and establish who these people were. So plot-wise, I don't think most of them were all that complicated. Like, Batman number one was a lot of fun. It basically has Batman trying to save a plane that's crashing. So it's a pretty simple story, but it's actually, you kind of, it gets into like the mindset of Batman, and as he's trying to figure this out, like, step by step. And, you know, that was pretty cool, and I'm excited for that, where that goes. So I'm overall happy. I'm still trying to figure things out when it comes to this Rebirth stuff, like what these things mean.
Yeah.
I think if I was a huge DC fan, like if I knew all about, like, and had knowledge of their back history and, like, had a lot of affection for what these characters used to be, it probably would work a lot more. And it's weird, but as someone who doesn't have that, it just feels like I am kind of missing something that I should already know.
Yeah. That's what I was going to ask. Like, have you found anything else out about, like, the Watchmen angle? Or, like, you know, what is that all about, that reveal that they had in the Rebirth issue? Or
the only ones that have touched upon that were actually the Flash issues. Okay. Flash Rebirth and Flash number one. And Titans Rebirth, they touched upon it a little bit, but Flash Rebirth was almost like the second issue of the Rebirth story. It kind of continued some of the, it started off before the Rebirth issue, and then had scenes directly from it, and then kind of continued the story from there. So that's the only one so far that's tied into any of the Watchmen stuff. Again, I'm only one issue in for all these, if that. So I know there's three or four issues for a lot of them by now. Yeah. So that may have changed, but they haven't really gone that deep. I feel like it's going to be something that they maybe don't get into for the first maybe six or so issues, or I don't know.
Yeah.
But
interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited. I think DC's trying to right the ship, but like I said, I still feel like they're still figuring out what all this means. Maybe they know, but I'm still kind of confused about where all these places are, but they've all been pretty solid teams. Green Arrow has been pretty good. That one, it seems like it's getting back to, it's like a mix of what Green Arrow used to be with the TV show in a way. Like, so that's been pretty good, but better than the TV show and not as weird.
Hopefully not the fourth season of the TV show.
No, I think more season two. So
nice. Oh, speaking of that, I just want to mention real quick. Did you see, I just saw this today, they actually cast Dolph Lundgren to be a villain in the flashbacks for Arrow Season 5.
No, they did not.
Yes,
that is
they
amazing.
Did.
They're still having flashbacks? Didn't, like, they already catch up with
it? Well, no, because this is the fifth season, so this will be the fifth year of on the island. So they said this is the last year of the flashbacks, because this will explain the final year that he was missing. So they actually, like they were saying too, they have a lot to explain. And Stephen Amell actually, like, went through and made, like, a list of things, and he met with the producers and everything, and he's like, we need to address these things. Like, how did he, you know, make his first bow? How did he make his costume? How did he do all these things? Because they haven't really, you know, completed that picture yet, so to speak. So
yeah,
this is, like, the last, you know, year of the flashbacks. They need to address all those things, but, you know, they're looking for a really good villain, because the show has suffered since Slade Wilson has sort of went away. So I don't know, like, what textbook says to go get Dolph Lundgren when you have a problem finding a villain, but
I know, usually if you need your franchise to be reestablished, you get The Rock. So
yeah, but it's enough to intrigue me, because, you know, I'm an 80s kid, so I know Dolph Lundgren, and I'm very familiar with his stuff. But
did they say what character he's playing?
Not that I read. They just said that they casted him. He's the main villain of the flashbacks, though, not, like, of the current time.
Maybe just like a sort of soldier or something like that.
Yeah, I guess he's like, I think it's something to do with Russia, and so he's playing the Russian again. They're gonna explain something about how he got how Stephen Amell's character Oliver gets some of the tattoos that he has and stuff like that, and you know, wherever it's gonna take him, I have no idea, but I thought that was interesting though. It's enough to kind of pique my interest because you know, when you have a problem, you turn to the 80s to kind of pull yourself out of it. So
yeah, there you go. Eye of the Tiger. Nice. You think you're gonna go? I know you said you didn't finish season four. Are you gonna finish and go season five or?
Yeah, I will. I think season four just really, really left a bad taste in my mouth though. Like, and I think it was just the weakness of the Damien Dark character. Like, I just did not care for him at all. Like, I had no interest. He didn't scare me at all for whatever reason. It was incredibly lame. And I mean, I don't want to like rag on the actor too much because I do like him and I liked him as Dum Dum Dugan and stuff like that in Captain America, and I think he was in
some Band of Brothers. He's really great in Band of Brothers.
Yeah, he was in that, and he's in that movie with The Rock that was pretty
entertaining.
Walk the Line. Yeah.
No, Walking Tall. Walking Tall. Walk the Line's Johnny Cash movie.
Right.
Walking Tall the Line is the Rock Johnny Cash movie.
Right. So I mean I do like that guy, but for whatever reason it just didn't work at all. Like the dialogue they gave him was really corny. He was really like an eclectic character, and it was a total turn off. And I wouldn't find myself clamoring to watch Arrow every week like I did with Flash. Like, I had to make sure that I was free and on Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock to watch Flash, but not so much with Arrow. I just kind of lost track of it and everything. But they need that really good villain to get people back on board. So,
do you also hear the big news that The Flash and Supergirl are going to have a musical episode?
Yeah, I did hear that. Not sure to what extent, if the entire episode is a musical or if it's just like they're going to have one little number there. I don't know.
That's how they're going to explain all the universes come together, right, in a gigantic musical. So.
Yeah,
it makes sense when the two stars are both, you know, former Glee castmates. So
yeah, hopefully, I mean, I kind of have faith in them. I think they're probably going to do it in a fun way that'll make sense. I don't think they're just going to randomly break out into song. Like, you know, the writers are usually, especially in Flash, like they're pretty solid. So I have faith that they're going to do it the right way, you know?
Yeah. Even at some shows, like Buffy had a musical episode. Some other shows have done musical episodes. As, you know, when you have 22 episodes in a season, you know, you can afford just to do one, like, one for fun.
What did you think of the guy in the Superman picture for Supergirl?
Like I said, I tweeted out, like, he looks like young Adam Carolla.
Yeah, you know what? He kind of does, yeah.
But I think he looks fine. I'm surprised that they're going like with the suits. That it is very much like the suit from the movie. I thought they would go with the more traditional one, but I guess not.
It was funny. Like, I mean, I'm willing to give the guy a chance. He doesn't really look the part right now, but I'm willing to give him a chance. But I just thought it was funny because I saw a tweet. It was a picture of him, I think, with Stephen Amell. I don't know if you saw that particular picture.
I think I did, and he's like half the size of Stephen Amell.
Yeah. And not only that, but it's like someone commented on it. They're like, I thought that was just a fan getting his picture taken of Stephen Amell. A fan in a Superman costume. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I can totally see that. Like, it just looks like some nerdy fan in a Superman costume, like, that just met Stephen Amell. It's like, hey, can I get a pic with you? Like, that's what it looked like. It's like, nope, this is Superman in the Arrowverse. So.
Hey, I mean, if Dean Cain can be Superman, anyone can, I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
Speaking of things, did you see the newest Luke Cage trailer?
I did not see the newest one, no. I saw the one
from Comic-Con.
The one that came at Comic-Con. Did they release another one?
They did. Okay. I check it out. I didn't realize it until someone commented on our episode post about it, and I saw it, and man, I am stoked for that series. It looks great. Yeah.
I saw that there were like pictures and everything, but I guess I didn't see that they did a new trailer.
Yeah, it has. I mean, excited because there's some castmates from The Wire because that's required. But it shows you who the new villain's gonna be. Ooh. And it's interesting because I feel like with these Netflix shows, Marvel's done a really good job of like the tone has been the same, but the style has been different with each one.
Yeah.
So this one's definitely, you know, not to be cliche, but a little bit more, certainly a little bit more hip hop. I love how it's like really using Harlem. And I had like some hesitations regarding the guy playing Luke Cage, like when we talked about the Comic-Con stuff.
Yeah.
After seeing that, I have none. He's got like I think the perfect sense of humor to make it work. So I'm super excited.
Nice. I will have to check that out.
All right. Well, we're just gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, we actually have a grab bag full of questions that we'll be working our way through. So it should be some fun, good conversation. We'll see you in a bit.
Because the world needs another movie podcast.
The GeekCast Radio Network presents for your listening pleasure, The Cinema Geek.
Hosted by Amanda, Kevin, Matt, and Dan.
Each week we dive headfirst in the landscape of movies as we discuss movie news, play movie games,
go in-depth on reviews,
and even have a top 10 countdown or two.
Also, don't miss our director retrospective series, where we review noted directors' movies film by film.
Bottom line is, if you love movies and love podcasts, you need to experience The Cinema Geeks.
You can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or GeekCastRadio.com.
Hey guys, this is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Every week on our show, you can join my co-host Brendan and I as we review the latest films that's out in theaters. It also inspires us to discuss a top three list of some sort, and we have a lot of other fun movie discussions as well. It's always a blast. And we also have a show on Fridays called our Extra Film Podcast. This is a show that gives us the space to talk about the latest indies and art films and other classics that we normally just don't get to talk about on our main show. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, and more. In fact, you can just see everything about us, including our social medias, at InSessionFilm.com. So join us every week. We'd absolutely love to have you.
All right, and welcome back. Yeah, so today I just have some questions here that we'll talk about. We'll see how many of these we get through, see how this goes. But I actually looked at some questions we had previously and just some things that I figured that, you know, we were some comments that we've had previously on episodes. And but anyways, but I figured these can lead to some interesting conversations. And, you know, I was just talking about Rebirth. And, you know, fall TV is actually, new seasons are right around the corner. So I figured this would be a good question to ask. And when you're starting a new TV show, when you're starting a new comic, it may be the same amount, maybe different. Do you have a certain amount of issues or episodes that you'll give something before you'll determine if you'll stick with it or not? Like, do you give the pilot, and then if that's not good, you'll do something else? Or, you know, how long of a leash do you give something, or overall?
I would say a minimum of three for me, whether it be three issues or three episodes or something. The pilot or the first installment of whatever it is pretty important to me. If it grabs me right off the bat and it's really good, even if like the next two episodes are kind of crappy, I'll remember that first episode was awesome and I'll stick with it a little bit more. Now, if the first like three in a row are crappy and showing no signs of improvement at all, I'm pretty much done after three. Like, I have to see some sort of, you know, spark in there, something interesting. Now, I know, like, a lot of shows take a while to sort of get their footing, and one example I can think of is probably Gotham, because I watched the first three of that. I think I even stuck around for, like, four or five, and it just was not what I thought it was, and I just sort of abandoned it. But now I hear it's like really good now for some reason, but now I'm so far behind, so I'm still kind of discouraged and not willing to watch it all to catch up. But that's sort of the one example I could think of. But yeah, usually, you know, three, four episodes I give it and go from there.
Do you have has there ever been a show that like the first episode was just so bad you're like, nope, I'm done here, I'm not even gonna give it another episode or two?
I think, yeah, there was a show. There was a show, oh gosh, it was had to be like 4 or 5 years ago. I think it was called The River or something like that. It was more of like a scary show. It was more a little bit in the horror genre kind of, and it was something about this lady's husband disappeared, and it was like way down in this swamp or rainforest or something like that in this other country, and my girlfriend at the time and I remember seeing the previews for it and we were really excited for it and like, oh, you know, that looks really interesting. And we watched the first episode together and it was like terrible. Like it was so bad. It was not what we were expecting at all. So I never even watched the second episode of it.
Yeah.
So it can happen. If it completely bombs out on the first one, I could definitely see just sort of, you know, pretending it didn't happen, just walking away.
For me, like, usually I give it everything one episode. Well, not everything, but anything I'm interested in one episode. And then I make the determination, like, I give kind of, there's three separate options I go through. Option one is that I continue to the next episode. Option two is like, okay, this is one I'm just going to wait on and then watch, like, when it hits Netflix or something like that. And option three is just, like, I'm just not going to watch it at all. Like, for example, last year with Supergirl, watched the pilot. It just, like, it did not seem like a show I would be interested in enough and to like, catch up with every week. And time slot also didn't really work that well for me. I think it was like what, on Tuesday nights or something like that. I don't remember. Monday nights.
I think it was Mondays. Yeah.
Yeah, which, like, you know, Mondays are usually really busy for me. Plus, like, you know, NFL's on or something like that. So I ended up like, oh, I'll just wait for that. And I kind of wish I kept with it because I felt like a lot of people were saying it got better as it went on. Like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I continued and then by episode I forget which one it was. It was, I think, the one app before Gravitron, or I don't know, the second or third episode of the series. It just was like, I can't keep up with it. It's,
yeah.
It, especially if my wife's not into it as well. Like, if we both like it, I'll probably stick with it. Something like Walking Dead, for example. The first season was not great. The first pilot of Walking Dead, you mentioned, if it has a great pilot, you'll stick with it. Yeah. The pilot of Walking Dead is amazing. But then the rest of that season is like, you know, eh. And then, you know, it second season, it's a bleh. And then it gets good eventually. It gets there. But, again, it was another show that my wife and I liked to, so I stuck with it.
It gets really good when they shoot the 8-year-old boy.
Yeah, exactly. As often is the case with, you know, once you do that, that's a good sign. But, so, yeah, if it's a show that we both someone interested in, I'll probably stick out. But then I watched something like Ballers last year on HBO, and like after those first two episodes I'm like, I'm done, I can't watch this anymore. Like, it just wasn't working for me. It just felt like this isn't funny or dramatic, it just kind of exists, so I'm just not gonna watch it anymore. So with comics, I probably give comics more of a leash, I think, than I do with TV, maybe because it's, I feel like it's less of a time commitment mostly. So and then there are those comics I'm like, why did I read that? Like, why did I keep reading the freaking Onslaught Reborn miniseries by Rob Liefeld? Why did I read all that? Like, I don't even, but I did.
Because you're just a fan deep down of, you know, disproportionate body parts and limbs and stuff.
And I think it's a completionist to me. If, like, I start a miniseries that I know is a miniseries, I just feel like I'm going to have to finish it for the most part.
That's interesting you say that, because I'm actually more strict on comics. And it's because, like, you mentioned how the, you know, it's not as much of a time commitment. But for me, it's a lot more of a money commitment, because the freaking comics are like $4 a piece now.
True.
I'm like, I'm looking at all of them, like, you know, I look from time to time online, like, what's coming out and stuff, and I'm like, do I really want to read that? I'm like, do I really want to spend $4 on that? Like, I just kind of, like, look a little bit more with a microscope at that and try to analyze if I really want to. Now, obviously, if it's something like Silver Surfer, Thanos, or X-Men or Guardians, something that really catches my eye, like, I'll buy it and check it out and everything. But other stuff I tend to sort of wait and hear the reaction of the fan base, and then I'll just kind of like wait and pick up the trade paperback when it comes out or something. Yeah. But
to clarify, when I may continue it, but not necessarily continue it right away, as in like I'll go and buy it when it's a dollar in the bargain bin or something of that nature. So same like some benefits of like online subscriptions or through the Marvel Unlimited, where you get access to things, so you don't have to buy per issue. But if it's like you said, the good thing about Rebirth, I would say, is that the comics are only $2.99, so that's a nice reprieve from all the other expensive ones.
Yeah, and so it's interesting too. Like, I'm sure everybody knows this if you've been buying stuff for a while, but the Marvel trades are usually a lot more than the DC trades. Like, if you look at a book of like the same size, like it's pretty much the same thickness. Like, you know, the Marvel one might be $25, and the DC one's $15.
Yeah.
And it's like, holy crap, you know?
That's why, unless I really like need something, I'll just wait to a Comic-Con where I feel like I'll be able to get it half price or like cheap, you know? So I know, like, Marvel needs, their prices are getting ridiculous.
Yeah. Recently, like, I'll probably talk about this another time, but I just recently bought an X-Men hardcover, and the cover price on it is $50.
Jesus.
And there's only 7 issues collected in the book.
That's insane.
And I ended up luckily finding it on eBay for $18.
Wow.
And it was in perfect brand new condition. It was still in the shrink wrap.
Yeah.
Got it for $18, luckily. But when I got it and, you know, I looked on the back, I'm like, really? $50 cover price? I'm like, I'm so glad I got a bargain on this. Yeah, Marvel is just ridiculous with some of their prices. I don't know what is going on there, but
I don't even know. What was a new X-Men, like recent, or is it a classic X-Men?
No, it's actually it's a classic 90s X-Men thing. It's called Mutant Genesis 2.0. It's basically the original Jim Lee and Chris Claremont, the first 7 issues of X-Men. But it's recolored with using the new digital methods of coloring.
Really?
Yeah, and it's I cannot recommend it enough. It's freaking awesome.
Interesting.
The digital coloring looks phenomenal. It's so much better. Like, you do side by side with the original release from 1991, and it just enhances Jim Lee's artwork so much more. It's unbelievable.
You know, speaking of X-Men in the 90s, you know what I can recommend you not waste your money on? The 90s X-Men series currently by Marvel.
Oh, the X-Men 92?
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah. I think I bought the first issue of that, and because I just wanted to have the first one with the nice cover and everything. Yeah. But so it's not that good?
It's weird. It like, makes fun of the... I mean, not the 90s are not worth making fun of, but... It's like very, it's almost like self-referential, and I'm not a huge fan of the art. Like, it's like, I don't know. It just was not a huge fan of it. It just seems, it's such a weird book. Speaking of something I couldn't go on with, I think I made it to the second issue. I'm like, I'm done. This is just, the artwork just felt painful to me. I just could not get through it. So
good to know, because I was thinking about picking up that trade when it came out, but.
Yeah, I mean, I would say maybe flip through the artwork, see if it works for you, but it didn't. It felt like a really poor imitation of the 90s. Like, it was trying to be the 90s series, but not really, and it just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Felt like a kind of a cash grab more than an actual series. So, all right. Well, another quick question here. Speaking of superheroes and the way they look, do you have, you know, this is kind of open-ended, but what are some of your favorite superhero character costumes?
Just superheroes, or you're going to any, like, villains or superheroes, doesn't matter?
Go with any characters.
Boy, there's a lot of them. I tend to like the colorful ones. I'm a bit of a redneck. I like shiny, colorful things.
You know, I'm a fan of 90s comics, although, like, foil-tin, right. You know. Yeah,
all the gimmick covers and everything. I got all those up on my shelf hanging out. I think, boy, some of my favorite... I would have to include some of the 90s X-Men, the blue and gold team stuff on there. Like, that Rogue costume, absolutely love that. That's probably that particular version of Rogue's costume is my favorite. I think, Wolverine's had so many. His don't really change too awful much, a little bit. I mean, the Astonishing one was a little bit different than that, but I think Gambit's costume I always liked a lot. I thought it was kind of weird, but it was still interesting. Like, he had the pink going on, and then he had that weird, like, yeah, collar thing. I don't even know.
Which was, like, became a thing for, like, Havoc had it for, too, for, like, that weird, yeah, like, head, almost, it's like a hoodie, but not, I don't know.
Also, I think the Cyclops version, the Jim Lee Cyclops version, that to me is, like, that's the version of Cyclops that I think about. Like, I know a lot of probably the older generations think of some of the other costumes with his whole head covered and everything, the old, like, the darker blue costume, but I always liked the Jim Lee version. The Colossus costume. Colossus is one of my favorite characters, but I always liked that, for whatever reason, that contrast with the shiny silver skin and the almost the chrome skin, and then he's got that red and yellow costume. I always liked that.
I really liked his the one, like, his alternate costume he had for Age of Apocalypse too, because, like, he had, like, bandana over his face or whatever for no apparent reason.
I apologize here because I have a list, a little list here of my favorite ones, but
oh no, go right ahead.
I think a little bit to DC. I love the Nightwing costume, the blue and black one in particular. Nice, I don't know what it is about that. That blue and black just really, like, just looks awesome. It's a very simple costume. You know, he's just got the simple mask and he's got the blue and black costume, but I think it looks amazing. One of the newer Batgirl costumes where she's got the it's black with the gold trim. She's got the gold boots and gauntlet and belt and stuff, and she's got the purple cape. I think that costume looks amazing. That looks really, really cool. Greg would probably agree with me right now because I know he's a big Batgirl fan. Also, I think the Sinestro Corps costumes, for whatever reason, I thought they look really, really cool. Just that black and gold. And I have some of the 6-inch figures from that. And I like when they have, it's sort of like a metallic finish on the gold, and just that metallic gold and the black costumes, they just look, they're very striking. I don't know, I like them a lot.
Yeah.
The new 52 Black Adam, sort of, they gave him, like, the new costume, they sort of gave him a cape now. That, I thought, was pretty impressive. And the lightning bolt on the chest, it actually has, like, it looks like a real lightning strike would, like, in the middle. It's, like, sort of blue highlighted and stuff like that. It's just really, really cool the way they designed that costume. And then I got to give some love to my Spider-Man Rogues Gallery. Some of those corny villains. Electro with that giant, you know, five-pointed mask.
Yeah.
And that for whatever reason, the yellow and green, and it's used on a lot of characters, but it just really sticks out to me, the yellow and green. I love the Electro costume. Hobgoblin is one of my favorite costumes, just that orange and that teal sort of color. I've always liked the character Hobgoblin. I try to, like, pick up all the Hobgoblin issues I can and stuff. Yeah, and then I think Shocker too, I always liked his for some reason. I know it's, like, kind of goofy, it's, like, yellow and brown and stuff, but for whatever reason, some of those Spider-Man Rogues costumes are pretty creative and colorful and stuff, so.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of Spider-Man, one of my favorites is probably Iron Spidey for some, like, the orange and yellow with the Spider-Man look just is pretty, it's That's pretty awesome. Gorgeous. The classic Taskmaster, not, like, the newer one, but the one that's kind of like a hodgepodge of, like, every other character from, like, with the mask of the skull mask and the cape, and yeah, like, he just looks like major badass. Dr. Doom, like, it just works, you know. Dude in metal suit with a green cape, it's simple but effective. Some other ones you mentioned, Wolverine. I mean, the Vision. I'm looking through my, like, the classic Vision, especially even when, like, seeing Vision in things that are not his costume, for some reason. Kind of just his look, his
you
face
mean like
works
a sweater
really well.
And khakis?
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of Spider-Man 2, I do love the classic all-black, white Spider-Man and Venom. And Venom and Carnage as well. So, and the updated Thor look that they, I think, first introduced around, like, 2006-ish, that they've kind of gone with since then. Like, the way they modernized it, but still kept with the classic look.
Is that with, like, the chainmail armor sort of on the,
yeah,
on the arms and
yeah.
legs?
Yeah, and no longer, like... like the, not with the huge circles on his chest anymore, yeah. But you know.
So what? I don't know if you had any left, but what would be your favorite Iron Man armor if you had one?
Oh man, there's a lot to choose from. I think I like the Extremis armor the most. Just something like there's a certain like presence to it in a way. I don't know. It feels. The most menacing of all the armors. I just like the way that it was drawn. If I'm going off the beaten path, also, I don't think this was ever in the comics, but I had the toy, and I think it was in the cartoon. He had like a samurai armor that had like knives and stuff on it, and it made no sense. But I, as a kid, it was like one of my favorite toys, and I still like that version of it.
See, I thought you would go Hulkbuster armor there.
Oh, that's I almost feel like that's cheap. It's like it's more of a vehicle than a costume.
That's true. Yeah, I always liked. I did like the Hulkbuster one, but I always liked the one. I think they call it the Neo Classic Iron Man armor, and it's the. I guess the best way I can explain it, it's the one with the big boots from like the 90s.
Okay.
I think it was in the cartoon. It was in the Marvel Action Hour, the Iron Man cartoon. I really liked that one for some reason. I always thought that was pretty cool looking.
I do miss it looking like a suit, actually looking like, you know, he's in an iron suit. Like now it just feels like he's, you know, it's like skin, which makes sense. It's supposed to evolve. Yeah. So,
takes away a little bit of the charm though.
Yeah. And also I would have to say like the Flash, like his costume, it just seems like unimprovable. It just seems perfect for him. Like it's one that I think that's kind of stayed the test of time. Him and Spider-Man, like they're so classic, you kind of forget how good they are. And
on that note, too, I'd like to bring up the Flash's costume that they're trying to use in the DC movies, and I am not impressed with it at all. It actually looks like an Iron Man armor in a way. Like, there's, like, big, bulky, clunky pieces of armor. He's got, like, shoulder pads and stuff. I'm like, what is this, the 80s? Like, I don't know what's happening here. Why does he have, like, a suit of armor on? I mean, you know, maybe it's something specific that they're trying to go for, and we'll find out at a later time. But to me, you just can't beat that, the classic Flash costume, the form-fitting. Like, even the TV show version, I think, is, like, far and away better than the movie version right now, but
I don't know why they need to mess with like that. It just makes no sense. But the last one I had listed that we didn't talk about was, it's kind of a cheat because it's kind of a copy, but Moon Knight.
Okay.
Moon Knight. He's got a great look to him, even in like the new his new series is amazing. I haven't talked about that, but and then also I don't know if it even counts as a costume, but Ghost Rider. It's kind of it's kind of cliche, but you get a good artist, and like Ghost Rider has some of like the best covers ever. Maybe the comic inside isn't great, but the cover looks badass.
I guess one that I would just like to add real quick is probably Gladiator from Marvel. The Shi'ar Gladiator with the big mohawk and everything. He's got sort of that almost like a Doctor Strange looking cape with the high collar and stuff. I just thought he always looked like very, he just looked like he was in charge. You know, he looked very formal, and it was the guy that was like the leader of the Imperial Guard, but he was also, for some reason, the way he looked was important to him or something. I don't know. He just looked like he was a tough dude. Yeah. So.
Nice. And depending on how this goes, maybe we can end on this last question. You know, we've been talking about the movies, the TV series. There's been a lot of superheroes that have been in comics or the TV show. But what are some of your favorites that have yet to grace the big or small screen?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think there's probably a lot of the ones that could fit into, like, the Netflix shows and stuff like that. Some street level guys. I'm thinking. Well, I guess in a way, that guy's already kind of been in there, but I'd really love to see, like, more of Absorbing Man. That wasn't Netflix, but that was Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it was kind of cool, the little bit that they did with him. I think there's even more potential there to kind of expand on that. I always thought that was a really cool character, and it's a cool character to explore in a movie or on TV as well, because there's so many things you could do with the effects. You know, he's absorbing different type of materials and, you know, changing his skin and everything. And I just think that's, like, sort of like a mini gold mine for, like, having a character on the big screen or the small screen. So I'm not really sure why you wouldn't sort of really be clamoring for that character, because I think that's kind of a no-brainer. People would really be intrigued by that. I can
give you one of mine if that would help. So Marvel hasn't really got, I mean, it got into some of the cosmic stuff with Guardians of the Galaxy, but one of my favorite cosmic characters I would like them to kind of use, and there's a lot of different versions of this character I'd be really happy with any, would be Nova.
Yeah.
I would love to see him somehow in a series, even the Nova Corps or something like that. I think I love the new series where you have, like, Sam Alexander, who's, like, the young kid. Or you could use Richard Rider, you know, either or I'd be happy with. I was hoping, I know, like, they had, I guess, kind of the Nova Corps in Guardians or so, but that wasn't really the real Nova Corps. I'd like to actually see the, with the helmets and the powers, and that would make me very happy.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think probably more along those lines, like the cosmic characters, there's a couple that I would really enjoy seeing. You know, maybe they could sort of fit them into a Guardians of the Galaxy movie as well. But, you know, maybe somebody like Super Skrull. I know he's probably tied up with the Fantastic Four, and maybe there's some copyright issues with Fox there. But I would love to be able to see Super Skrull in some way. I think that would be really cool. Beta Ray Bill, I think, would be awesome. I've really liked that character for a long time. And I think with everything they're doing with Thor, and that could sort of fit in there very easily. It wouldn't be hard to pull off at all, I don't think. Gladiator, I mentioned. I'm a big fan of that character. There was another one I kind of escaped. Oh, you mentioned about Taskmaster. I think Taskmaster would be cool to, like, show up in something like Iron Fist or something. You know, somebody with some really high-level martial arts skills, like, you know, to kind of, for Danny Rand to face off against, you know, maybe have Taskmaster show up there. I think that would be pretty awesome.
I know Captain Marvel, we're getting that movie, but also the new Miss Marvel, she's actually quite a great character, and her and Nova are currently in the Avengers, so if they're looking to kind of continue the Avengers with new characters, I think they're good people to go with. Squirrel Girl, I know, like, we talked about it before. I think, like, I don't know if a movie would be the best, like a live-action movie, but maybe something like a cartoon. But I'm really surprised, though, that we have not seen something like She-Hulk yet.
Yeah.
I feel like she would be a character that would be great to have. And, you know, they have the Hulk, you know, why not bring her in somehow?
Yeah, definitely. There's probably tons of other ones I could list.
Yeah.
Nothing's really coming around right now, but as soon as we stop talking about it, I think of, like, five more.
Exactly. Like, I don't know if you mentioned Adam Warlock, and I'd love to see him. I know they've talked about the Inhumans movie. I don't know if that's still going, but I would like to see Black Bolt and Medusa. Like, I honestly think they would make a better TV show.
Yeah.
In a way. Like I said, Game of Thrones with mutants, I think, would be exactly what that show would be like.
I would love to see also, I know that the DC movie verse is just sort of getting off the ground a little bit, but, you know, and we're probably not going to see Green Lantern for a long time, but I would love to see a Sinestro Corps. at some point. I think that would be pretty awesome.
There's a lot of DC characters I would still love to see. Hopefully we'll get
in particular. I think I'd like to see Arkillo, who's a member of the Sinestro Corps. He was sort of like the second in command for a while under Sinestro, but he's the dude with like the really ugly face and the big teeth. And he gets his tongue ripped out by Mongol, but I just think he's a cool looking character. He'd look pretty cool on the big screen. So
I'm guessing we're gonna get Darkseid eventually, and that's the thing is like, we've had all these movies, but there's still a lot of great characters that can tap into. Like, I imagine Moon Knight. I think Moon Knight would make a great TV series. But even like, we're getting a Legion TV show, which I had no interest in, but seeing the trailer, I'm like, that actually seems like it could work. So I'm sure there's like other characters like that that are, like, you know, long forgotten but can make actually good TV shows. And like Cable, and I do love Cable. And hopefully he is in the next Deadpool movie. So.
Definitely.
But all right. Well, we'd like to hear what are some of your favorite superhero costumes? What are some of the superhero characters you'd like to see in movies? And what did you think of Jason Bourne? And there are a lot of different ways for you to let us know. And you can go to the episode post at geekcastradio.com. You can email us at feedback@geekcastradio.com. Or hit us up on Facebook and Twitter. We're at Talking in Circles, GCRN. Chuck, you're also on Twitter. What is your Twitter name?
I am at Heroic Age Chuck.
And I am at Movie Revolt. And Greg is at The Create Forge. But that'll be it for this week. We'll be back next week. Same time, same channel, same podcast feed. But for now,
this has been Chuck.
And this is where Greg would talk, but he's not here. And this has been Dan. And we've been talking in circles. We'll see you next week.
I feel like I should have, like, picked up the slack a little bit and like maybe thrown in a couple dirty comments or something somewhere. Just this is not the same though.
And Emily Bett Records, Emily Clark, I don't know.
Emily Ratajkowski, like blah 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 blah.